President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Ladies and gentlemen, give a nice, warm round of applause to our engineer tonight, Mr. Donald Newsom, who has been working feverishly on the whole network all day long. This is a holiday. This is our Independence Day, and he was nailed to the floor in the studio. Poor guy. Well, we'll try to cheer him up tonight. We've got a great show lined up for you. I'm going to skip the news tonight. Let's just keep memories of the beautiful fireworks that you may have seen when nightfall fell upon your particular part of the country. Also, I want to welcome many, many people I'm getting emails from around the world, actually, many, many different countries. And I'm happy to have you listening. If you enjoy these shows, please tell your friends and your relatives and your neighbors and even your enemies about this show, because your enemies could become your friends once you turn them on to Evident Footprints. Lots of thank yous out there for many, many emails I received, and I owe a big thank you to Kiki for her compliments on both the show and my DirectLightProductions.com website. And Kiki knows what's involved in creating a website on your own, and she had some nice compliments for mine. In fact, I'm hoping to have her come on a show pretty soon to demonstrate her fine talent in the artistic world. She's a fabulous artist and got a lot of really inspiring art to share with everyone, and a great outlook on what can be done to right this ship that we're all sailing on. Speaking of ships, that's exactly what we're going to talk about tonight with our regular Friday night guest. He is a scientist and inventor extraordinaire, not necessarily in that order. The extraordinaire actually applies to both. He's also an author, an accomplished lecturer, and an accomplished teacher. And he is quite an accomplished guest on Evident Footprints. And he is our honorary science advisor. And his name is Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you, Don, and happy 4th of July to you.
Thank you. Have you felt independent today?
Well, no more than usual, but I still try to keep alive the spirit of the occasion, if you know what I mean.
Yes,
and,
yes.
I did watch the fireworks show that they had televised from Washington, and I must say they certainly spent a lot of money on that lavish display. It was pretty impressive.
Yes, I watched all of about 3 seconds of that version. I had other things I had to do, so I couldn't really pay attention. But I'm glad you got to see it. You can tell me about it sometime. or we'll see the replay probably for the next 3 months, won't we? Like everything else.
Yeah,
I know you wanted to talk about something dear to your heart, something with which you're familiar. And in a sense, this particular topic actually runs a parallel course to the research that I have been doing for the past 2 years or so. And I'll let you introduce the topic, and I'm there if you want to ask a question or have me make a comment. I turn the mic over to you, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Don. And as you know, I will always lean on you as much as possible.
We seem to have lost Jim's audio here. I don't know if Don is around.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you, yes. Okay, and I got a little bit of echo. Okay. Try again, Jim.
I was just going to say I appreciate you turning the helm over to me, but as usual, I will do my best to lean on you for clarification and your particular insights as the case may be. What I would like to talk about is something that I experienced initially as a young boy, and which has also surfaced in more recent times. And it's an important subject, not only because of my personal involvement, but I think in many ways it's a symbolic issue which gives us some insights into the way in which our country is headed and perhaps perceived by others. And so on the 4th of July, seems like an appropriate topic, Don.
Okay.
Let me start off by saying that my dad met my mother in Europe during the war. He was with Naval Intelligence and he met my mom in Italy and so she became a war bride shortly after the war. And when I was 5 years old, they went back to visit her parents, who were, her dad was not doing well at the time, and they took us along on the trip, and us was me at 5 years old and my sister who was 3 years old. And we went by ship, which was really an exciting experience, and I remember it very well. Now, a lot of people wonder how I can remember that far back, but the fact of the matter is, the clarity of the entire situation is very vivid in my mind. We left New York, of course I don't remember the dates or anything, but we left New York, bound for France, on the ship called the Liberté. It was a French ship, and that was a very interesting experience. And then we took the train from Le Havre, France, to Rome, where I stayed with my mother's folks for about a month. But it's the return trip that is the one that I want to talk about. And the reason for that is because of the fact that it was done on a really interesting ship. And before I mention the name of this vessel, I want to just give some insights from that particular trip on the return voyage. I remember so clearly standing on the deck of the ship with my dad, and looking at the sights in the French town of Le Havre. And then we departed. And if I remember correctly, it took approximately 2.5 to 3 days to cross the Atlantic and arrive back in New York. Now, during that time period, by the way, I was just as involved with all sorts of things as I have been in the rest of my life. I was just talking to my mother today about one of the excursions that I had, and that was when I disappeared on the ship and was promptly located by some of the crew members down in the engine room. I actually found my way down there, and I was determined to get a picture of the engines. I had my mother's camera with me, which I didn't even know how to operate, but my intentions were pretty obvious. Another interesting thing that occurred was that my sister got really sick on the ship, and it turned out that they traced it down to the milk being sour because of a broken refrigerator, which was kind of interesting. But the most memorable thing that happened was that there were a lot of celebrities on this boat, and one of them was Milton Berle. And I can still remember my dad pointing him out to me, and he was up to his normal shenanigans. He was in a lifeboat with a cook's hat on, and he was making believe he was rowing the boat with a broom. And my dad said to me, go over and say hello to your Uncle Milty. And I'll never forget that, because I didn't know who the Dickens Uncle Milty was. But anyway, the ship was the United States, the SS United States. And I was fortunate at 5 years old to be on the return leg of her maiden voyage in 1952. And it's that ship that I would like to talk about. And before I get into the main portion of my delivery here, I thought it might be worthwhile, Don, for me to give some background information on the ship itself. First of all, she was the fastest ship, a non-military ship, built in the United States at that time. And believe it or not, she had a power plant which exceeded the power capacity of battleships of that era, which is a pretty remarkable statement. She was steam-powered and turbine-driven, and her lines were exquisite, and she was red, white, and blue, which is a hard thing to forget. Now, what's interesting about this whole deal is that there's a lot of rumors about the fact that the United States, the ship, the United States, was actually on a secret mission. And I'll explain that in a moment. But what's really amazing is that she had surface speeds of almost 50 miles an hour and could cross the Atlantic in less than 3 days. Which is pretty amazing. She was capable of carrying up to 14,000 troops, and she had a total range of over 10,000 miles nonstop, which gives you some idea of how well designed she was. But despite the possibility that she could be used for troop transport missions, her obvious purpose in those days was to provide inspiration, because she was looked upon by the whole world as the best produced by America at that time. And she remained a symbol of the United States during the Cold War era. So there's a great deal of importance about the ship, and the idea of her being on a secret mission, there's a lot of talk about the fact that, you know, that they were actually contemplating using her design. She had a very, very unusually shaped prow, and her displacement and her engine capacity were selected for the utmost of reliability and speed, so that the idea was that there might be many sister ships built of the same variety with the intention of using them for troop transports if need ever should arise. And in that respect, she was an experimental device, even though she was disguised as a luxury liner. Now, the ship was incredibly large. First of all, she was built between 1949 and 1952, but to be honest with you, I don't remember what shipyard she came out of. In those days, we were still building ships, so it could have been any one of several. She was 990 feet long, and under normal circumstances, she was designed to carry 2,000 passengers in a luxury setting, and they were attended to by a crew of 1,000. Now, that's a lot of crew members. On her maiden voyage, of which I participated in half, she set world speed records for a transatlantic crossing. And she was designed by William Francis Gibbs for United States Lines, and in those days the president of that company was John M. Franklin. Now, what's interesting about Mr. Gibbs, I don't know too much about him, but what I've managed to find out is that he was kind of a renegade architect who broke with the tradition in many ways and decided upon this very radical design for a number of reasons that seemed good to him. But the product that he produced was magnificent. The United States was very easy on the eyes in terms of her lines, and the way she was painted really brought out her best qualities. And she was a combination of strength and beauty and performance that you don't see very often, and especially you don't see nowadays. Traditional ships that you see now are more like the ones that are advertised on TV on these carnival crews, and they are multi-tiered or multi-terraced vessels, which are... they're designed in such a way that everybody almost has their own balcony off their staterooms, and the tendency of these ships nowadays is to have a very high center of gravity, which is very dangerous in my opinion, because it's okay if you're puttering along in the smooth waters of the Caribbean, but if you get into a squall in the North Atlantic, I wouldn't want to be on one of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am not a naval architect, Don, but they look top-heavy to me, and I wouldn't want to be on board, you know, testing out the theory in a violent sea. But interestingly enough, the United States did plow through incredibly high seas, and she was extremely stable and... conducted herself beautifully even in foul weather. So anyway, before we get into the main part of this story, let me just say that she was in active service between 1952 and 1969, which is, I guess, a reasonably long period of time, but surprisingly short, you know, for a vessel of her size and quality. But of course, the concept of traveling the Atlantic by ship kind of waned quite quickly in that time period, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to lean on you at this point just a little bit, Don, to bring in the parallel that you talked about and describe how this meshes with the research that you've been doing in some of your personal work, and then we'll discuss the fate of this vessel.
Okay, if we were going to take a break, so Jim, if we can do that right now first, then when we come back from the break, I'll be happy to do just that, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you.
Okay, folks, you're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. We are on both station number 1 and 2 tonight, I'm told. And we're going to take a short pause for the cause so you can get a short message from a couple of our sponsors. And then we will be right back to continue this story of the SS United States with our special guest, Jim Murray. Be right back.
Well, partner, we got our pork and beans, we got our coffee, and we got this real nice campfire. now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Yes, John Boy. Got this here radio, but we ain't got no battery.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go to town and get some for the both of us.
Go to him. Make my day.
Dad, damn it, you and your BBS radio.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well,
yes, we do. We love BBSRadio.com, and we love Evident Footprints, and we love tonight's guest, Jim Murray. And before we took that short commercial break for some bill paying, actually, somebody's got to keep us on the air, and we thank our sponsors, the Idaho Observer and Hemp USA, and Tom James, actually. Before we took our break, Jim had passed the baton to me to have me draw sort of a parallel, and I think I know where he's going with this story. Throughout my research, and much of my research during the past 2 years or so, has been looking into some of our famous political families. We have had some crazy things going on in recent years. And I'd have to say probably the past 70 years or more. In fact, we could go back easily 110, 120 years and see that there were some things going on that weren't above board. And we seem to be propelled into a foreign central bank controlling our U.S. Treasury, among other things, known as the Federal Reserve. And an infusion of people from all over the world, which is part of the American dream. I'm all for that. However, there were many people who were brought into the country as infiltrators or as spies, and their intention was not to stay here, but these people hid their identities. I've written about that. If you go to directlightproductions.com and go to the articles page, you can read some of the genealogical research that I have done during the past 2 years, and much of what I have discovered is via the shipping records. And so the significance of the SS United States may have everything to do, or something to do, with many of the anomalies that I discovered. There were ships owned by British shipping companies and German shipping companies, Dutch, French, and pretty much any country in Europe that was into sailing had at least one shipping company. Some areas were notorious for building ships, and then they would sell these ships to other countries, and they transported all kinds of goods across the seas and around the world. One of the major uses for ships historically has been for people trafficking. And they're used in wars. Many cruise ships that are used to transport people across the ocean when they're on vacations become converted to transport ships for troops and arms and the like. And, of course, we know from having done quite a bit of research that they also use these ships for moving massive amounts of money and drugs and other items that are smuggled around the world. And many of the companies that owned these ships, particularly the German companies, used those ships to steal technology from the United States and take it back overseas. They supplied Hitler with all the things he needed during World War II, and we're not just talking about money, we're talking about arms. If you contemplate for a moment the fact that both sides were shooting at each other with bullets made from the same factory, it's kind of insane. Yet the same families, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Bronfmans, and the like, all had massive contracts, and they profited immensely. They say at the end of World War One, World War Two, the Rothschild family made something like $1 trillion. I think that was just scratching the surface. And they claim that the Union Banking Corporation, where Prescott Bush used to work, had made something like $4 billion. I think that was a gross understatement as well. And many banks and finance companies, Brown Brothers Harriman were one, Kuhn and Loeb, they were affiliated with Union Banking Corporation, and they were found in 1941 to have been trading with the enemy and shut down in 1942. This affected the shipping companies to some extent, but at that point, I'm sure because of the research I've done, I've seen that people were secreted into the country with the knowing complicity of the INS. And you can only do that through bribery or complete infiltration of the government. That's the only two ways you can do that. Or the other would be just total neglect of duty and total stupidity on the part of the person allowing a foreigner to come in. These people would say that they lived in New York and they had been there, that they were born in the United States, and somehow they were either given a false passport or they were just allowed to go through the turnstile, and it was business as usual. On subsequent trips, these people would identify themselves again, saying that they'd never been to the United States, and they would say where they were born. It was interesting that James Loeb, who's lauded by the Harvard Loeb Classic Library as the founder of that library on their webpage, they claim he was born in New York. Yet I have him on a couple of occasions saying that he was born in Landsberg, Germany. So even the beneficiary of his humanitarian donations didn't get the story straight. There was one ship which secreted many of the bankers, and Paul Warburg was one of them, Harry Sachs, Loeb, who I mentioned, and others, which was called the America, spelled with a K, the SS America, which was part of the Hamburg America Lines. And in addition to that, there were ships owned by the Roosevelt and the United States Lines. And that was owned by Teddy Roosevelt, who subsequently, after the assassination of William McKinley, became the next president of the United States and aided and abetted the King of England in bringing the McCann family into the United States and infiltrated into the U.S. Navy with the name change, McCain, and that name sticks today. And that is on my website. It's groundbreaking research, and everyone should read that. Now, that's about all I have to say right now. I could go on and on, but I want to answer or respond to Jim's request to sort of embellish the parallels with what I think he's going to reveal to tonight's audience. Jim?
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for that interjection. You obviously have a lot more familiarity with that portion of the story than I do, Don, so thank you. But basically, this particular ship, whether it was ever involved in that type of activity or not, I don't know. But the parallel that I would like to make here is between the vessel itself and our nation. If you recall, back in the 50s, when the UN was first built and the United States, and I'm referring now to the country, was involved in world affairs and was looked upon as a great leader with the proper intentions for securing world peace and demonstrating the right way in which a government should be formed and operated. For the most part, there was a pretty high opinion of our country around the world. Well, this ship, the SS United States, was actually looked upon in many ways as a representative of our country. It was like the flagship of our nation, in a sense. And there was an enormous amount of pride associated with that vessel. And not only the ship itself, I might add, but the atmosphere that surrounded its daily operations was entirely different. I have no idea how many people are listening to us tonight who might be familiar with what the West Side of New York City was like back in the 1950s. But there was an enormous amount of harbor activity in New York at that time. There was shipbuilding going on. There was transportation back and forth. Enormous amounts of freight were being moved. And lots of people preferred to travel to Europe in a more elegant and leisurely style by taking these great cruise ships across the ocean rather than airplanes. And, of course, that's understandable because the airplane was not so developed as it is today, and traveling by, let's say, Pan American or some of the other earlier companies that provided the transatlantic service left a lot to be desired. But nonetheless, the attitude and the camaraderie that was associated with the entire shipping industry and the harbor activities and the country in general is reflected in the pride and the design of that beautiful ship. And the rest of the story generates from that particular setting and approaches the situation that we have today, and that's where I'm headed with this concept. First of all, as I mentioned, as air travel became more and more popular, and the airplane became more highly developed, and when they used to serve more than peanuts for eats, the popularity of the airplane slowly eclipsed transatlantic travel by ship, except for the very wealthy, and slowly the public seemed to lose interest in that entire mode of travel. So the SS United States was eventually retired. She was put into mothballs in 1969. And, you know, for a long time she just languished there at the dock. Perhaps the people who owned her at that time envisioned that she'd be put back in service, because actually she's very young for a ship to be retired. And she was so well built and such, represented such a massive investment, not only of capital but also of technology, that it's inconceivable that you would just tie her up and forget about her. But eventually that's exactly what happened. And tragically, they wound up stripping the ship of all its furniture, its cooking utensils, its amenities for passengers, and all sorts of memorabilia. And all of that was auctioned off, and basically she was then nothing more than a hull with engines still intact. And she was eventually towed to Philadelphia Harbor, where she is still today. She resides there today. And even though her hull is still in good shape and she hasn't deteriorated too much considering her neglect, the exterior of the ship is a very, very sad thing to see. I mean, her beautiful colors have long since faded. She's streaked with rust. The red, white, and blue that she was painted is all chipping and peeling away. And as disgraceful as that may sound, what's even more disgraceful is the fact that the ship still represents a symbol of our nation, because since those years of the 60s till today, our infrastructure has decayed. The quality of life in our country has degenerated incredibly. And it's amazing to me that the symbolism that I see, the ship and the condition that it's in today, is a direct reflection of what has happened to our nation. And while there's a lot of folks out there who may not care about these issues, I believe that there's probably people who understand what I'm trying to say, and perhaps share my feelings regarding this unfortunate state of affairs with our flagship. But I think that it's very possible that she could be saved and restored, and I think that would be a very worthwhile undertaking for a number of reasons. First of all, with a little bit of publicity and a few million dollars, she could be put back in service, and she could again represent the nation like she used to do. And restoring that ship, Don, in a lot of ways, might just symbolically represent the feelings that I think are surging around in a lot of our fellow countrymen nowadays, that they would like to see a resurgence of the United States as a company. I mean, as a country, not a company. They would like to see a return of our country to its former status, and allow us to take a responsible and intelligent position in world affairs. And so I see the resurrection of this ship as a symbol of the resurrection of our nation. And I would like very much engender a spirit in that direction for accomplishing this. I think it would be a very worthwhile undertaking. What are your feelings about that, Don? Do you see the parallels that I'm trying to make?
Yes, I do, absolutely. What comes to mind while you're talking is that we have some 10,000 ships owned by the United States, and out of those 10,000 ships, 9,800 of those ships are flying under foreign flags, which means we have 200 out of 10,000 ships sailing with an American flag. So what you're telling me isn't really a surprise. I did a little bit of research as to who is currently in possession or has authority to maintain the ship or whatever that means. And it's under the auspice of the Norwegian Cruise Line, which I find interesting. And they have international sites in Europe, Germany, Spain, and the United Kingdom, according to their webpage. It smacks of the same things that I saw throughout the years that I poured through in the process of researching who these people are. I don't know if it's feasible. Are we doing this thinking that this is our ship and it now belongs to another country? I think that would be something worth looking into. I happen to know that there were a lot of sunken ships around the world that are serving another purpose other than sailing. And I mean, one could deduce that because these ships are sunk that they can't sail, but they have another function, believe it or not. So what you described is definitely what we've witnessed here in our country. The number one question I would have is why? Why has this happened to that ship? Who was behind that? Who made that decision? And who were all the amenities from the ship auctioned off to? If it's privately owned, I guess that's their business. But to call it the flagship of the United States and to have it have that ending is it's kind of disheartening, if you know what I mean.
Well, not only that, but there's also, and I mean, I'd be the first to admit that, first of all, I'm somewhat emotional on this subject, and so I may not be as logical as I usually am, but it just seems a little strange to me. I have been around the shipping industry all my life, raised in the New York area. As you know, worked in shipyards, sailed on tugboats and other vessels, and well familiar with the men and women who have made that type of work their life's vocations. And in New Jersey, for instance, when a ship was taken out of service, if it wasn't immediately had something done with it, it was very promptly dispatched, cut up for scrap, and the steel reused, or, as you pointed out, it was given other uses. One of the weirdest things that somebody along the line decided was a good use for old ships was to tow them out to the edge of the continental shelf and open the sea tocks and let her sink, and thereby providing the nucleus for reef production, because the ecosystem of the seas is very much dependent upon the health of our reefs, and the prolonged dumping of sewage and other toxic agents into the oceans has been killing reefs in a very accelerated manner. And so some genius got the idea that the barnacles and stuff that grow on ships would serve as a nucleus for the production of reefs and would represent havens for fish. Well, interestingly enough, neither of these alternatives were applied to this ship, and whether that's by design or circumstance, I'm not in the position to say. But it's very strange that she would be sitting, you know, in this condition in a very prominent shipyard where people can see her and just allowed to deteriorate. Now, there have been some talk about refurbishing her. As a matter of fact, I was aware that the Norwegian Cruise Line have control of the vessel now. But thank God they haven't tried to scrap her, although I know there was talk about it by different agencies. But there was some talk about refurbishing her and using her for purposes of cruise lines up and down the coasts, both the Atlantic and the Pacific, and then allowing her to pass through the Panama Canal in the process of this. But apparently, whoever was examining the bottom line, which, of course, is the motivation for everything in this world, came to the conclusion that in the investment of $12 million or so to put her back in operational condition may or may not be justified by the amount of business that she would solicit once she was revamped. I think that for this particular ship, that type of logic doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that if somebody had the gumption to go ahead and do this, that they might be very surprised to see the surge of response, if for no other reason, if not for patriotic purposes, certainly just for the novelty of it. I mean, you see all kinds of people flocking to ride on these Mediterranean cruise boats, which are basically, you know, floating banquets for all intents and purposes. And so I can't imagine why this similar response wouldn't be engendered by putting this vessel back in tip-top shape. And I totally disagree with one of the ideas that was generated by some Houdini out there, that the thing should be completely redesigned and her upper decks structured to imitate these multi-tiered cruise ships, because then you just have another abortion afloat, as far as I'm concerned. There's no beauty in the design of those things. They are strictly designed to stuff as many people into them as humanly possible and keep them entertained during the course of the trip. And I don't think that should be done to this vessel. Interestingly enough, Don, I have some ideas about how this might be accomplished. I don't think I'm prepared to go into it on this particular show, but what I would like to do, by the way, how much time we got left?
Oh, we have probably another 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. I would like to interject some information here. While you were speaking, I was able to look up, who owns Norwegian Cruise Lines Limited. And actually it's called NCL Corporation Limited. I should have been a bit more precise there. Star Cruises Limited in Malaysia is an investment holding company. It appears they own Norwegian Cruise Line, and so they have the ship under their flag. Some brief information on the company. They have a combined fleet of 21 ships with about 33,000 lower berths in service and an additional two ships with some 8,400 lower berths. It operates under two principal brand names, Star Cruises and Norwegian Cruise Line, including NCL America. That's in Miami. Star Cruises operates 8 ships offering various cruise itineraries and calls destinations primarily in the Asia-Pacific region. Now, Norwegian Cruise Line, it says, operates 13 cruise ships offering cruises in Alaska, Antarctica, the Bahamas, Bermuda, the Caribbean, Europe, Hawaii, Mexico, New England, North Africa, and Central and South America, and Scandinavia. They also own Royal Caribbean Cruises, Emperor Entertainment Hotel Limited, Carnival Corporation, Royal Olympic Cruise Line, Fijian Holdings Limited, Talink Group AS, and Carnival PLC, and Macro Corporation Limited. So that sort of answers the question I asked earlier. I wonder who owns the ship.
Well, that's interesting because obviously a corporation of that size is far from broke.
Yes.
I would be very interested to know what the heck the rationale is for retaining possession of the United States and not doing anything with it. You know, it's a very strange thing. Now, I do know that there's a conservancy. I knew I'd get that out eventually.
I was going to say that you couldn't.
There was a conservancy group. A conservancy group called the SS United States Conservancy out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And they are trying desperately to raise money and secure interest in preserving and revamping the SS United States. And, you know, while I almost never request anything from our audience, I think it would be an absolutely wonderful gesture on the part of we citizens if a lot of people would write to these folks and somehow lend them any support possible. The most expedient way to do that would be to purchase their DVD, which is called Lady in Waiting, which is a very appropriate title, by the way. And it's only $20. I mean, it's $19.95. And, Don, with your permission, I'd like to quote the contact information, if that's okay with you.
You have my permission to do that? Sure.
Where people can reach out to this conservancy group. It's called the SS United States Conservancy, and they are at P.O. Box 9048, Raleigh, North Carolina, 27675. Also, they have a website, which is http://store, S-T-O-R-E, .bigshipfilms.com, and the phone number is 617-320-8459. And I just think it would be absolutely wonderful if we could get some of our fellow citizens to feel the same way we do about this vessel. And I'll tell you very, very frankly, Don, I've been talking to people that I know about a method whereby the funds might be raised to actually do this. But as you know, that all takes a lot of time and a lot of negotiation. But in the meantime, if anybody wanted to really learn more about the SS United States, I have seen most of this film called The Lady in Waiting, and it's really extraordinary. There's wonderful footage. The views of the ship are extraordinary, and the history that's revealed is very worthwhile. And your $20 would go towards a fund for helping this beautiful vessel to survive. And I know I would be personally grateful to our listeners if they could consider spending a little bit of money for a very worthy cause. How do you feel about that, Don?
Oh, I agree with you. And I'm interested in why this ship is in the hands of a Malaysian company. I really am. Guess I got some homework to do. Never fails.
Well, I mean, you're such a good investigator when it comes to that kind of stuff. I'm sure that you will use your intuition and wind up finding out all sorts of things that we would never know otherwise. But, yeah, it would be very interesting to know that. And I'm hoping that the reason that she's still in existence is only because they haven't yet figured out a scheme by which they can put her back in service. But somewhere in the depths of my soul, I'm concerned about the fact that she's deliberately berthed there and allowed to rot. So that you might say it would be a slow degradation of an American symbol, and I'm hoping that that's not the case. You know.
Yeah, I share that sentiment with you, Jim.
Yeah, it would be a real shame. There's enough stuff wrong in this country without having that going on. And it would be really interesting if people could unite, even for something small, you know, like this. This is a relatively small project compared to all the other stuff that's wrong with the country. But, you know, every little step that you take towards making something better has a synergistic effect. And maybe it would be... to use a term that would be acceptable on the 4th of July, it would be like lighting a fuse, you know, to an effect that would be much more profound than just renewing the boat. The entire country needs renewal, as you know, and it's got to start somewhere. So why not let us get together and start the whole ball of wax moving by being instrumental in restoring one of our nation's finest symbols.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a wonderful thing to do.
Sure, and as you come up with more information, or together as we come up with more information, we certainly can talk about this on another show, too.
Oh, I'd love to do that. As a matter of fact, I'm usually much more prepared than I was tonight with this. But it's very difficult to get information from normal sources on this, and so the next time I bring it up, I will have done a lot of digging and perhaps a lot of talking to people behind the scenes, which is something I'm pretty good at.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we shouldn't let lapse, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you were a witness of research on the fly tonight, Jim, on evident footprints. So that's the miracle of the internet, is there is information out there, and thanks to Google, you know, you can, if you put it in Google the right way into a search engine, usually something will pop up. But I'm glad I didn't have to turn over too many rocks to find out what I have so far. So I'll be there to help you in any way I can.
Well, I appreciate that, and I would be very excited if we got some response from our listeners on this. This isn't the normal type of thing where we say to people, you know, come on and call a station and let's have some interaction. This is a totally different flavor. This is something that I think represents the real core of the issue in our country. If nobody's willing to do this little thing, then nobody's going to be willing to do much of anything else. And so I don't want that to be the case. I will definitely discuss with you and perhaps with our audience at a later date, you know, some of the things that could be done to turn this around. And that in itself would be an amazing source of information for a show. So let me work on that in the coming weeks. And in the meantime, let's get out there and order some of these films. The Lady in Waiting is a wonderful presentation. It's well done, and it's worth $20. So let me stop there.
Okay. Well, Jim, do you have a closing sentiment for our listening audience on Evident Footprints tonight on this 4th of July?
Well, I do, in a sense. I don't want to get into it too deeply because you know what happens when I get rolling. But but basically, you know, the 4th of July is the celebration of our independence from England as a result of the Revolutionary War. We all know that. At least I hope we all know that. And, you know, this time in our history is very crucial because we have to really understand, and I hope that this is one of the things we can accomplish on this show, we have to really understand that the true plight of our country is such where we really have to be concerned about our independence in a very, very big way. There are forces operating which do not want the United States to exist in the way that it used to, and there's nobody that can cause this to be derailed, this effort to be derailed, except us. And if we're going to be complacent about it and unconcerned, then we also have to be willing to accept whatever horror story is eventually precipitated by our neglect. And so on the 4th of July, why don't we give some serious consideration to taking an active role in doing something to make our country better. And one of the things that we can do, and it still works, is to pick up a pen or get on the typewriter and write to your congressmen, write to your representatives, and tell them what you really think is going on. Let them know that you're not going to take some of this guff lying down. And the next thing we should start doing, to be honest with you, is when we don't get any responses, take them out of office. You don't have to wait for an election. We have the right to impeach. So anyhow, without getting up ahead of steam here at the end of the show, let me just say that what we need to do is to coalesce and act in unison as a nation if you want to save the nation. And let's let this little project of resurrecting this ship be like a beacon of our intentions. And let's get something done, instead of just talking about it and complaining.
Amen. I couldn't have said it better. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim Murray, for being on Evident Footprints, and I look forward to next week's show. As always, you're on Fridays now. And I think you liked Friday better anyway. In the beginning, you were on Tuesday nights.
And no, it was Monday, wasn't it?
I think Tuesday nights. Oh, who knows? I think regularly you were on Tuesdays, and the first chance I got to let you sleep in the morning, I moved you over to Friday. So you'll be with us next Friday, and hopefully 1,000 more to come, if not more.
That sounds good to me. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, and you have a good rest of the holiday if you're still celebrating. And also all the listeners out there, be safe. Watch out for the fireworks. Not to mention what they do to our environment and nature. Be careful. With that, I would like to thank everyone for listening to Evident Footprints. I'm Don Nikoloff. Our guest tonight, Jim Murray, will be with us again next week. Special thanks to Don Newsom for the great job on the sound tonight and manning the whole network, literally, single-handedly. Wish him a great 4th of July, and we'll see you all next Monday when my special guest will be Bill Cormier. And we've got some interesting topics to discuss. You don't want to miss that show. Meantime, have a great weekend and have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.